Well, this is a special evening. It's a vision, kind of a cooperative vision of several different forces here that have brought this to pass. And a lot of you have been asked to participate in a questionnaire, and you have done very, very well with that. So we appreciate that, and it's a project with the composition class at Pilgrim as well. They want to record some of these memories while you're still here to share the memories. So I commend you, first of all, on doing a very good job on the questionnaires that you were handed. I think for an order of the procedure here, we'll have a prayer to start the session, and then Miriam will make some announcements, and then we will go into some of the stories. Some of you have been assigned special stories, and then we want to go over the questionnaires, and we won't have time for all of your observations, but we want some of you to share some of those, and we'll probably be quoting some from your sheets as well. So go ahead, Miriam.
I thought maybe I would explain a little bit how you happened to be asked to participate in this project, and not everybody else who is the same age as you was asked to participate. We made sure that everyone we asked to come was over 80 years old, so that's one way in which you qualified. And then we also asked each member of the composition class to identify one person in that age group that they felt some connection with. And then we invited all those people. And then we added to that list some others who we thought had memories we wanted to access, or who were just such good storytellers that we wanted to make sure we had them here. So you can identify yourselves in whichever category you would like. And I thought I would also do a little bit of introduction of the class. Some of you know some of these people. You may not know everyone. And I'm going to identify them by their parents, or maybe by their grandparents in some cases. And they wanted the name tags because they weren't sure that they would know all of you. And so that's why we have name tags on the tables tonight. They have 2 weeks to finish a project that we hope will end up with a little booklet of stories. And we do really appreciate your effort in recording stories and being willing to share them. There was a lot of interest as we looked at your responses, and there will be questions about some things that weren't that were just sort of far enough outside their own experience to be able to understand. At the end of the table over there is Anya Miller. She is Laverne and Rebecca's daughter. Then Christy Miller, Lowell and Judy's daughter, and Stephen Yoder, Oren and Joanna's son, Lillian Esch, Marvin and Dorothy's daughter, Kendra Shetler, James and Janet's daughter. Susanna Yoder is Richard and Susan's daughter, Carrie Byler, Larry and Violet's daughter, and Brandon Nisley is Brian and Doris's son. He has a great-grandmother in this group. I think maybe that's the only case where we have that kind of combination here tonight. So I don't know how this evening will go, but they certainly have already invested a good bit in this evening, and Lowell and Leroy and Joe and Twyla and others. So we're just grateful for everyone that helped to make this possible. I think I'll turn it back to Lowell.
Let's just have a prayer before we start. Dear God, we thank you for this evening. We thank you for these special memories that this group represents. Just pray that we could have an evening that's edifying and informative for everyone here. Just go with us, we pray in Jesus' name. Amen. Okay, can everyone understand? Is the mic carrying well? Can it all verstehen? Massage, John. Counselor Stay? Counselor Tahada?
He's here.
Oh, okay.
Can you understand it? Can you understand it? What he's saying?
Okay, that's all right. We'll just...
He doesn't understand.
Yeah, that's fine. Okay, there are some stories that people knew about, stories that they would have liked to hear firsthand, different stories, and some of you have been assigned those stories, and so we want to hear those stories firsthand. The first story is a trail story, and Fred Nisley is the one that's assigned to that story. Let me just get you the mic, Fred.
I really don't remember it, but it's more hearsay than what about this trail. But it came up, and it came right through the farm where I grew up, and it was and then it came on down, and it went through Ed Nisley's, where Julian's live now, and it fell up to Partridge. It came from Hutchinson to Partridge, and it was just a regular road there. And my folks' house was out back in a mile from the main road. And so they moved the house up, and of course, then there's people that were using it. They just kept on using it. This is what my grandfather said. And they got tired of it. So they went in, and maybe you don't know what a lister is, but it made deep heart furrows through that, back and forth. And that stopped the people going using it. They were not supposed to use it anymore. Of course, the farmers didn't want them to. I don't know if... I think this is about sort of...
Okay, and that was it during the night that the farmers got together and had it ready the next morning? Or
I don't know that.
Okay. Okay, well, if you know how a lister works, you could easily imagine that complicated the road quite a bit. Do you have any idea when that might have been? Was that in the... around the turn of the century?
I'm afraid I can't. I don't know for sure. You know, David?
No, not exactly. I know a little bit about that. Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
Just give it to Jay.
Pass it back and forth.
I'm assuming this was the same trail that went Caddy Corner through the John B. place. That's where Clifford lives now. And there were, before they broke that pasture up, there were still tracks there in the sod. And I think they said that trail went towards Sun City, and that's southwest, sort of toward Pratt. I don't know where it ended up.
Sun City, southwest of Pratt, possibly. Okay. Very well. Any questions for Fred? This story. Okay. That's very helpful. That's a good start. Pass the mic to Melvin there. And the story is a story about a harness and a horse trader, I think. Does that sound right? Go ahead, Melvin. Tell us the story.
Well, I a little bit fuzzy on this on some points, but I'll try and give it as best as I can. One night when we were all sleeping, this new horse or a new horse harness disappeared. And they looked, they saw the tracks in the back of the barn, clear down the north to the north road. And it was inspected by the authorities and took pictures took pictures with the track get the tracks.
It was like footprints, or was it a vehicle? Footprints.
No, the track tires.
Oh, okay, they came in.
Yeah,
okay.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So they never found out who it was at that point. So Hootie was a horse jockey, and I guess he was blamed for some of it, for taking it. And Dad got the blame for giving this or making this known in a roundabout way, that who he was to blame taking it. Well, it came to pass that after a while, Hootie was got word of this, and he took charge of telling Dad that it was he's going to he pressed charges.
Okay.
And he charged Dad $100 to be quiet. Dad paid $200 for the
harness.
Uh huh. So this came out, and Hootie got hold of it. And so Dad paid him the $100. Hootie was quiet. And there was an Amish boy taking part in this.
You didn't say that he made also a confession?
Not yet. I'm there. the word got out, and so the ministers told Dad to be safe, or how should I say, to make things right. So he made a confession in church. And this went on and kind of dropped the subject. And about 40 years later, and this is what I'm not quite, I'm a little bit fuzzy on this, but 40 years later, we got a letter from this Amish boy that, let's see, that was, he wrote a letter, and this letter came to Sam Nisley in the neighborhood, and I'm not quite sure which Sam Nisley was it you?
No? Well, I think your family got the letter.
Well, we got it, yeah.
Yeah, we got it. After all, Menno got it then. He was taking care of Mommy's belongings. And so the letter wrote that he was sorry that he did it, and it was Hootie that did it, and he helped him. And it was an Amish boy. I don't know if I should name him, but I'll leave that. So we'll leave that there. And the Amish boy wrote this letter 30 years later, 40 years later, and confessed. And after he had confessed, he lived yet about 6 months or so.
Huh.
He died.
Hmm. Okay. Well, that's a very interesting story. I've heard some of that before, but okay, go ahead.
And you remember that Hootie, Ira Hoover was his name, and your dad had traded horses, and in retrospect, your dad had the better the deal, because the mare that he traded for had a nice sorrel filly colt. And of course, that was, everybody knew that this time Hootie didn't get the better end of the deal. And so immediately when this was a new set of harness that Sam had got, and it was, times were pretty hard then, actually. And I think that Hootie came to Sam and I think just verbally sued him for slander.
Uh-huh.
And so Sam did what he should have done, I guess, and paid him off.
Okay, does anyone have any questions? I think that's a very interesting story, and a story that there was an Amish boy that was involved with the situation and helped Hootie make the theft, and this bothered his conscience, and 30, 40 years later, he wrote a letter trying to clear things up, and he died then within 6 months or so.
You see, he showed him the way. He showed him where to find the harness in the barn.
Yeah. Okay. Any questions from the students over here? Okay. I think... Okay, John, are you ready for the story about your shucking corn out? Let me get you a mic.
You know what he wants to do? He wants you to say this about the shucking, how you went to shuck corn years ago.
Shuck corn.
Yeah, you and your brothers.
Oh, yeah. Well, I was three of us boys, we decided we wanted to have a job in Depression time, and we got a job 30 miles north of Sylvie. It's about 30 miles west of here. We shucked for a cent and three-fourths a bushel on Kansas nubbins. And my dad, he
little
used
corn,
to
little
be
here.
Able to shuck 100 bushels a day. And, of course, this boy thought, well, anything could, I could do anything Dad did.
Yeah.
But I failed on that one. So we shucked 10 days, and then the boy came out and says, I'm sorry, boys, I haven't got money to pay you.
Okay. Oh. And how many bushels were you getting a day?
That's pretty good. But he said he would send it to us. About 2 months later, I got a check for $21 for 10 days for three boys. We had to board ourselves. We shucked from sun up to sundown.
Okay.
And we averaged the take home pay was 70 cents with the time everything was done and said.
Okay.
But we didn't figure anything for our meals. The harder we worked, the more we ate. The more we ate, the less we had. So. When you sent us the bill of the check, he had a lot of figures down there, and on the bottom of this bill was 2 cents. I didn't know what that 2 cents was for, and checked over a postage stamp to send the money to us.
Okay. Well, you wouldn't want to overpay, so he took the postage stamp out of the check. Well, so how many bushels were you doing a day if you couldn't do 100?
How many bushels could you get out in a day?
About 65 bushels a day.
Okay.
Yes, and that was Kansas nubbins. That wasn't Illinois corn.
Yeah.
Kansas nubbins.
Little bitty ones.
Yeah, about 4 to 6 inches.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Does anyone have any questions for John? Okay, thank you very much.
Okay.
That was a good story. Appreciate that. Okay, a big part of the a town trip was a fairly significant incident in your lives. And it was interesting going over your questionnaires how some of you talked about a town trip was something that happened once a year. And maybe mom didn't go to town very often, that kind of thing.
I may add another phrase to this.
Yeah.
When we shucking corn, I noticed a big hole in the field. And I told the boys, that's a badger. And I got badger traps at home. And we got them and put them out there. Nothing happened until we was ready to go home. And then I says, I want to take my traps home. We went out there in the field, and there we had the biggest badger that I ever seen. And I sold that skin for $5.
He didn't take that off of the check, did he?
May I add another thing?
Okay.
Okay. My neighbor had two girls. They disappeared, and I lost track of them, everything, you know. And finally, one of the girls came to me 30 years later. And says, John, do you know me? And I said, no, I sure don't. She said, "I'm Patty. Patty Epperson." "Oh, well, that was just fine." "Yeah, where you live?" "7 miles north of Sylvie." "Oh, well, what's your husband's name?" "Yost." "Oh, A.P. Yost was the one we were shucking for." So this was a grandchild of Yost.
Okay.
That I met 30 or 40 years later, living right in the same area we shucked the corn.
Okay, well, that's interesting. Okay, pass the mic on down. Dad, do you want to say something about the town trips? How they were and some... It comes out in the questionnaires as well, but go ahead and just kind of describe something about the town trips.
Well, I know it was pretty special. We got to go to town with Dad, and it seemed to me like our turn came around about once a year. I remember we used to go to Dillon's to buy our groceries, and Dad would have a list, and he would tell the clerk what he wanted, and the clerk would bring it to the counter. There weren't any self-service stores in Hutch at the time. So sometime later, one of the stores did initiate that. Of course, Dillon's eventually did too. It was really special to just spend that time with Dad and to participate and, oh, just be with him as he met people he knew and stopped and visited. Of course, we often took eggs to town, and the grocery store bought the eggs, and that gave credit for the groceries. And that was very common, that they would buy your eggs. And I don't have much more than that. We lived just east here, the first house where Edwins lived then.
Okay, where was the Dillon store?
It was B in Maine. There where Salvation Army is now.
Okay, it was in that same building that...
Right.
Okay, that even was up to my memory, so...
And Dillon's, I guess, gave that building to Salvation Army.
Okay. I think we'll, as we go through the questionnaires, have more details about town trips, because that was a fairly significant part of your lives. So does anyone have any questions for Dad? Okay, let's move on. And this will also come out somewhat probably in the questionnaires. Pass it to William, if you would. Do you want to talk about butchering and food peddling in town? No. Your grandpa, I think, did a bunch of butchering, but maybe Fred could speak about that. Levi's did that as well.
I never got in on it.
Okay.
No, I don't want to do all the talking tonight.
That's fine. There'll be other people get a chance.
Well, my folks used to butcher just like grandpa's did also. And we'd butcher a hog on a Friday. It was during the winter time, and we'd peddle it from house to house, or some places we took it to a store. And I was usually went with my dad to hold the horses. So he didn't have always, never had a place to tie them always. And I got cold, pretty cold sometimes. In fact, I had some earache sometimes Saturday night. I think it was all from that. But we had a top buggy, though. We took the back seat out of the spring wagons, what they used to call them, and then everything was in there. Of course, it wasn't just meat. It was also cheese and a lot of things that are made from milk, anyhow.
Butter?
Butter, yeah, and just a lot of things, anyhow.
Okay. And, someone mentioned cottage cheese. Did you have cottage cheese?
Yeah, sometimes, yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Baked goods or not?
Huh?
Baked goods?
No, we didn't take no baked goods along. It's mostly other things that... I know... I've got to tell you what I ate then. I went to Cozy Lunch there on West Beach, close to the delivery barn. And I got a big hamburger for a nickel. And also a big roll for a nickel. So a 10 cents worth, well, I got a good meal.
Okay.
And my dad used to... he'd get the soup, but it charged him 15 cents. So that's the way the meals were at that time.
Okay. That's very helpful. Something that I had kind of forgotten about, if I knew, and was just reminded recently or heard about it, was the beef rings. Perry, are you prepared to talk about the beef rings, how that worked? And we can pass around and get some help.
Yes, I remember welcoming our turn butcher of beef because the men would get together that evening and they'd get a piece of beef and then they'd keep track and so that everybody would it'd be fair. And I especially remember Walt Hurst. He used to be a jolly fella, and he was in on the ring. And of course, most of the rest, I think all the rest were from our church here. But we didn't have refrigeration at that time, didn't have deep freezes. And so that was needed.
How soon did the lockers, like the Marion Davis locker, when did that come into use?
Oh, I'm not very good at dates. I would have thought I would have been maybe around 20 or so. Would that be right, Amos and David?
You would have been 20 or in 1920?
I would have been 20.
Like in...
no, I was born in 25.
45 or whatever, yeah. Maybe.
I'm not sure.
And that was used fairly commonly then, before people had their own freezers.
That's
they would
right.
Take stuff to the locker in
and they put it in a drawer in a room that was zero, was cold enough to freeze it.
Yeah, like a cold storage.
Right.
Okay.
Walt Hurst had a shizzle.
Okay. he knew what a shizzle was. Huh? Okay, let's hear a little bit more about this beef ring. Is it right that they would, how many people were in, how many families were in the ring?
16 chunks.
So. Okay, 16 chunks. And is it true that they tried to move the chunks around so that every family would end up with all of the beef by the time it went around? Okay,
yeah,
there's
right.
Nodding of heads over here. Yeah.
Every cut had a description. And Edmund told me one time that my dad worked that out, got it going.
Okay. So that was a way with dealing with lack of refrigeration and that it could be an equitable way. And were there certain, were the critters supposed to weigh so many pounds or be young or not old cows or what was their... Sam.
Give him the mic.
Use
take
the mic.
The mic and
I'm sorry, yeah.
They weighed the portions and then settled up as the year came around then.
Okay, so if Dan Nisley's family got shorted 20 pounds after the end of the year, well, they would make it right at the end, okay?
Yeah, that's my recollection.
Yeah, I remember.
Okay.
The weight that they went for was about a 600-pound critter, and they established a price per pound. In other words, if you would have butchered one $650, well, you wouldn't have gotten a very much price, a very big price for that extra weight, because that was an effort to control the weight of the cattle.
To keep things keep it equitable with everybody, so you were trying to aim for the same amount of, okay. Well, that's interesting. I'd probably heard that, but it was almost a new one on me. Does any one of you students want to ask questions about the beef rings? Does it make sense?
I'm curious how they were butchered. Were they always butchered on the farm of the people who provided the animal?
Okay, they're nodding their heads on that one. And I think one of your questionnaires said if the farmers, I mean, if you wouldn't do it yourself, you would have gotten someone else in to butcher your critter. Is that, or do you think it was always done on by the family themselves?
Everybody knew how to butcher in those days.
Okay, another question.
How often did you have these butcher rings?
Was it 16, did it go 16 different places in a year's time? Is that what you're saying?
16,
so it would have been a little more than once a month. Does that make sense? Anything else anyone wants to talk about this? It was actually at Lizzie's the other evening that we were talking about the beef rings, so that was helpful. Okay. We had suggested that Edwin talks about the 61 highway coming in And Edwin's not here. Who would like to talk about how the 61 highway was done and approximately when it was built? Something about the details of the paving and some of those kinds of things, and how the grade was built up. I've heard some of these stories as well. Who wants to speak on that? Sam? Oh, you got a mic there. That's fine.
I don't know how qualified I am. I just remember hearing that they did it with horses. Is that right? Thinking it probably was while I would have been before 8 or 9, somewhere in there. Anybody know for sure? Would have been in the latter 30s.
I think Edwin may have some dates on his. I'm going to quickly look for it here. Yeah, I do have something here on that. Shall I just read what Edwin had written down? Okay. Built in mid to late 30s. Had truck and loader with excavator. But that was, I think, maybe for part of it, but had a lot of ASA, not horses, a lot of mules that were running these slips, and that different ones of you talked about the slips that brought up the dirt. Boarded them at Menno Yoder's, father of Menno, Melvin, Jerry, Dan, Albert. That would be Mary's
grandfather,
lived over here at where Willard and Gertie live now, across from Menno Nisle. Is that right? Okay. Use them with a slip to finish dressing the road. And what they would scoop in out of the ditch and bring up grade and bring it up on the bring up dirt and put it on the grade. Is that how you're remembering? Okay. Dottie Nisle sold his land to the highway people. Steinbach leased, not sold. Lived where Warnkins did in the Whiteside area. Does anyone know any details about that? During World War II, it wasn't paved, but they paved it in sections as they could. Does that sound right? This is helpful, and Edwin is pulling from some of the farther back memories on that. So anyone else want to speak a little bit about the 61 highway?
I remember very clearly when they were building that grade, and they had, I don't know how many teams, but it seems to me like several dozen teams, and they were mostly horses, I would say.
Okay, you thought there were more horses than mules.
Yeah, and
than
they
mules.
Just had a continual caravan of these going around in a circle, and of course a team with a man on the slip, and they were moving dirt that way.
Okay, and the slip, I imagine that's a little bit of an elusive, no pun intended, term for these young people here, but can you explain a little bit how it was?
It was a scoop, a good-sized scoop with two handles on it. And the man on the handles could load that with dirt and then dump it again at the appropriate time.
Mm-hmm. And they'd come in out of the ditch and then bring it up on the grade. And you were talking about it just kind of going in a big loop as they would keep on scooping and bringing that up. 61 highway, well, since it's been 60 and 51 and now 4-lane through here, but that was a interesting part. Amos, go ahead.
This brings up something that maybe don't need you to say, but I'd like for you to. Okay, back way back there when I was real young, yet why there was a fellow lived out there where a half mile south of River Miller's place, and this man was using one of these slips to move dirt and all, and a terribly sad thing happened. This slip was a large piece of metal, about yay big, kind of a coop shape. And then the bar to control this was up like this, and then the handle back this way. Well, this man took this, was moving dirt, and he had the accident of being thrown up because it caught on wood.
Mm.
And it's almost too gruesome to even say it, but this is I can't tell you the name of the man right now.
Freeman Carpenter,
thank you. Anyway, this man was thrown up in the air, and he came back down, and there was a post that he was hurt by rectum. It went right into the rectum, and the man died from that.
Now, that was a little different scraper than we were talking about. It was a bigger scraper. It had a single handle, but it was also operated by a man.
And caught on a stump or something in this.
And a couple of horses.
Okay. Okay, well, that's part of the hazards of that era. Okay, let's move on. Stories that I've heard fairly often are stories about lightning tragedies, and this involved Sam D. You lost a brother to lightning. You want to give a story about the lightning strike at your place, and then maybe the one also over at Levi Helms. John Helms, okay.
Yeah, it was in 31 that my dad was out in the field working with horses, and it started raining, so he came in and unhitched the took the horses to the barn, put them in the barn, and Brother Roman was 6 years old at the time, and he opened the door of the milk house, we called it, and laughed as Dad was running in out of the rain. Dad went on in, and Roman then was told to take a bath with a big tub that we usually took a bath in at that time. And this tub was next to the wire that had the crank on it and closed the window when it was supposed to pump, and then it opened up to let the windmill pump. And as was Dad was wasn't long until there was a real crash, lightning. And they thought it was awful close, so Dad went out and checked. And there they found the limp body.
That was Roman, was that his name? And how old was he?
6 years old.
6 years old.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then that would have been in 31, and then I think it was in 35 that Mother was expecting, which would have been Mandy then, and they didn't go to church that time, but the oldest girls went with Uncle Noah's to the church at Romans. Sorry, yes, John Helms. And just as church let out that time, they had a lightning storm. And I don't know if it was more than one crash or not, but at least there several of the girls were out close to the milk tank, what we call a cooling tank, and it knocked two of my sisters over.
How many of you were there at that service? Remember that. It's something that you will never forget as long as you have your sound mind, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've heard that story different times. Anything else?
Katie would be Eli's wife. Akilah Nazar was also knocked down. And it was told, somebody thought that Chris Yoder, let's see who would relate to Chris, that did artificial respiration to bring one of the girls back. And I'm not sure about that. Somebody else may have.
Was that like Moses' dad? Or? Yeah,
Moses,
okay.
Moses' dad. Mm-hmm.
I don't know if we can connect here very much, but yeah.
And Brother Alma was knocked down also.
Alma, yeah, Wagler later.
Mm-hmm. But it shredded their clothes. They burned and for quite a while. Mother kept those clothes around for us to see.
Okay, lightning strikes. Okay, go ahead.
We grew up with a real fear of lightning for those reasons.
Well, and understandably, if you did a lot around the windmills, that would have been a place that would have liked, I mean, would have drawn it. Amos and then Orpha.
My mom had a sister, Lydia, living down at Yoder. And that afternoon, my folks and us children went down to Sam Shock's with my Aunt Lydia. And we were there that night. And that evening, something different happened. We were in the room
of course, and we were sleeping, and but we had a kerosene light there that was burning low, and then a rain came up, and it just rained and thundered, and it was quite a rain. The same evening that Roman was killed.
Oh, okay.
And then we went to church the next. Well, okay. But a pigeon came up to the window in the room that we had a lamp lit, and it was burning low. And then my mom would get up and try to shoo the pigeon away. Or the, yeah, it was a barn pigeon. Anyway, and then the next morning, Albert Beach, we were going to church, and my dad and mom and us young, we siblings were. So we went to church, and when we got to church, on our way to church, we met Albert Beachy coming down from up here, way down by north and east of west of Yoder, is where we were traveling. And then we met Albert Beachy, and then he stopped, and our driver stopped too, and he said that lightning killed Dan Nisley's Roman. And we went to church, and I guess I cried nearly all the time through the church. But anyway, it was one of those sad, sad deals. Roman and I were real close little boys or buddies or whatever you want to call it. But that took place. The lightning struck and killed Roman the time that we were down there at Sam Schrock's for the night.
Okay, pass it over to Orpha, please.
I was 8 years old when the lightning struck at John Hillmouth's, and as was said, church had just dismissed, and I and another little girl were standing at the north end of the porch, and we could see everything that happened on the porch. And when that happened and I saw the red balls bouncing around on the floor, I thought it was Christ's return. Now, why? I looked out east for the first thing, expecting to see Christ there in the air. Now, why I knew about Christ's return, I give credit to the ministers who preached about it, or my parents that talked about it. I don't remember just exactly where I learned it, but I've been surprised that I immediately thought that was what was happening. But it taught me a lesson.
Okay. Well, certainly that was a very traumatic time, I'm sure, in the time that Sam was talking about when his brother was killed. Those were certainly times that will remain with you for a long time. Is there anything, any questions anyone would like to ask about this or other natural disasters? I think we'll be looking at some of those if we have time. The 48 wind storm and some of those things. Okay. Okay, what possessions did you or others value? And now we want to go just a little more into some of these maybe we will take them a little bit more in the order that you gave them, and we're not going to be able to get all of your responses out here, obviously, but if you have your own responses, and then we give a chance for some opening. What I will probably do is highlight a few of these that are listed, maybe read a few of them, and then maybe ask some of you for some of yours. And actually, the first page, to give it in the order that you have it there, commerce, enterprise, and self-sufficiency. How did your family market what you produced? And a lot of you had, there was these kind of informal marketing of the cream and the eggs and those kinds of things. Lizzie, why don't you say a little bit what you did on how you marketed some of your things. Do you have your questionnaire there?
Do
Did we not get hers back to her? It should be here. I think it might be that one. You talked about taking your cream to Partridge. Can you explain how that was a little bit?
That was in the marketing.
Mm-hmm. Right. How did your family market what was produced?
Is this on?
Yeah, it's on. Go ahead.
Well, I just remember that we, with the buggy, would take a 5-gallon can of cream to the railroad station to in Partridge.
And then who would pick that up, or would that was that just a regular the train made it picked up in Partridge and dropped it off at a creamery in Hutch, or
I'm not sure where it went, mm-hmm. but we that was all we did. We took it to the train and Did you take it to a depot?
Depot.
Yes, to the depot.
Okay. Talk about that
Later then, our cream was just bottled by Annabelle White on the farm, and she had a route in town.
Okay, and Annabelle White would live where Conrad and Rebecca live there on the hill straight west of here. Okay, Mary, tell us a little about the, what do you call it, doodle bug?
I don't really know too much about it. I just remember that there was a little train that went to town every day, and sometimes people went and caught a ride with the doodlebug. I figured maybe some other people would know more about it.
It was a single coach, motorized coach.
Okay, a single coach, a motorized coach, and that people could catch a ride to town with that. Amos, use the mic here. They're trying to record this.
If you would take this would be the doodlebug. The front part of it was pretty tall, maybe 3 feet taller than the rest of the body where the people sat in the thing. And that thing went north and south. I can still remember how that thing went. When, in fact, I rode one of those things to Oklahoma one time years ago.
Okay, but was this running on the railroad tracks? Or was
On a railroad track.
Uh-huh. On the Santa Fe, yeah. Okay. This I find very interesting. Even in my time, the use of the rails for local business was on the decline, but the Partridge Co-op would send cars of grain away, and here in the earlier times, they would take cream to the depot to send to Hutchinson. And I think in the questionnaire later, it talks about the trains, and someone thought there was 17 passenger trains a day that came by on between the two tracks. Anyway, go ahead.
And Doodlebug had the reputation of stopping at every little town.
Okay.
I think our cream went to Emporia. We shipped from Rock Island out there in Hutch, and it went to Emporia. They paid a little more money, I guess.
Okay, also went on the train, but was shipped to a creamery or wherever, a distributor in Emporia. Go ahead.
I don't know how many of you would recognize the name Venus Montrigger. He would have been our uncle, married to my aunt. And while I was a teenager, we took him over to be east of the Whiteside Elevator, closer to the where the road crosses the tracks. And there was a little house there. And we took him over there, and he went to that house. And as the doodlebug came along, he took his suitcase and flagged it down and got on there.
Okay, that's interesting. That's getting a little bit into the trains, and I think we will later if we have time, but we're talking about marketing, what you produced on your farm. There was a lot of direct marketing that was very interesting. The different families, the Levi and Isley family, I think the Dan and Isley family, which would be my great-grandparents, did butchering and a lot of direct meat sales. Many of you talked about cream and eggs, those kinds of things. Did more of your dad mention about the town trips? Did you often take the eggs directly to the grocery store and barter them? Was that a typical way of doing it? Or did you have your own routes where you sold them direct?
I think we've often sold it on the route, some of the eggs at least.
Okay, Barbara is saying that often... Go ahead,
excuse
right there.
Me, it's, yeah, yes, I think he sold that just right out of the carton, or maybe I don't remember that they used the cartons, but anyway, they sold them to the people with a lot of other things.
Okay, you were saying about the buggy, how that was, that people could kind of look at your wares.
Yeah,
explain that a little
out
bit.
To the, they could come out to the buggy and it was in the back, as I think Fred had said, the back seat was taken out, and so there was room for the quite a few meat was there, and meat, of course, in the wintertime, and in the summertime it was fryers.
Okay, then you took broilers out there then,
broilers,
okay?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you said that they had a curtain in the back of the buggy that they could lift up and they could look in and see what wares you had, what produce you had and stuff.
And he had, and my father had one store, a geese store, I think maybe, quite sure how it was called, but some of the people came in there and could get some produce from him. That was kind of a regular thing, I think, for a while. I don't know.
Okay.
I mean, just a place to, instead of going to each house, but he did from house to house.
Okay. Okay, the commodities that you sold then, besides those smaller things, your grain, how soon was Whiteside Elevator around? Was that, who was it that mentioned that the elevator wasn't a tall concrete building? Was that you, Perry?
Yes.
Pass him the mic, Dad.
I mentioned that the concrete elevator, concrete part of the elevator was built, but I didn't remember the date. And what was your other question?
Okay, was that those government storage bins there on the south side, or was that a different project?
Yeah, just west of the old elevator.
Okay, there was how many bins in there?
I think there were, 355,000 bushels, is that right?
I'm not. That meant in bin storage.
Well, I'm sorry, I'm not too sure about the amount.
Okay, so you sold, Sam, go ahead.
Just a little bit about that elevator. When it was torn down in 59, then Herman Yoder got the elevator and donated the 2x8s that came around, and those are up here in the structure here.
Okay, the 2x8s from the Whiteside elevator that got torn down were used for these purlins, or the nailers between the big steel beams that came from Butler Building Company, is that right? And how long are those bays? Are those 20-foot bays?
Is it 24?
Okay, whatever. Okay, go ahead.
I didn't know that, but I did help when they built that concrete elevator. And I remember Ira Miller worked on it, too. So, and it was a little... I was young married at the time. I don't know the exact date. It would have been early 50s, I would think.
Okay. Okay, very well. Someone had something about who was Noah Mass to you? Was that your father, John?
Yes.
Okay, Noah was your father. Do you remember anything about him shipping cattle to Kansas City and went with the train? Do you know anything about that story? Pass him the mic, Dad. Go ahead.
Shipping cattle to Kansas City. I don't remember anything like that, but we shipped some horses to Pennsylvania.
Okay.
We loaded there in the Santa Fe stockyards in Whiteside.
Okay.
There's a Whiteside elevator, red elevator, on the north side of the Santa Fe tracks, and on the Rock Island, there was also an elevator, which is concrete now.
Okay. How many horses did they ship to Pennsylvania, your dad?
Yeah, they brought Eli Miller. He shipped horses to Pennsylvania and Ohio. And this particular time, I helped load the horses on a pasture train and on the Santa Fe track.
Okay, but
the Santa Fe pasture train came from the west and stopped, and they had one
cattle car,
one car for horses.
Yeah,
we put them on there, and away you went.
How many horses were there? Do you know?
How many horses?
It was about 16 to 18 horses, and they was work horses.
Okay.
Not driving horses. They were work horses.
I wondered about that. Okay.
Yeah.
Any idea what the horses brought when they got back to Pennsylvania or Ohio? How much money?
How much money did they get them for?
They got enough money to just pay the mortgage. Henry Knisley bought that Eli Miller's farm, and then he got the abstract. And the abstract was loaded with money to ship horses to Pennsylvania. And he had to borrow the money to buy the horses, and he just little more than broke even. I would like to ask these good-looking girls what an OD mean stands for.
An old what?
OD. What does an OD stand for?
Okay. Do you girls know what an OD is? Have you ever heard of an OD? John, explain to him what an OD is.
Well, I tell you, if you lived my age, you'd know what an OD would be. An OD means overdraft in the bank.
Okay, and that little arrangement means that you wrote more checks than the bank has money in your account for, and so they send you a little notice and inform you of this little problem. Then what, John?
I should tell you about a dust storm.
Okay.
Maybe they're not interested in that.
Let's go with the dust storm. That's fine.
A dust storm would come in from the west, and it moved 6 to 8 miles an hour.
And the cloud would, you mean?
Yes, and it rolled. You could see by the pattern the wind is from the rolling of the wind. You can see it by the dust, and the dust this dust looked like mouse colored.
Okay.
And if the dust storm would have hit us this evening, by now you could write your name down with pushing the dust away with your fingers.
On the tables, there'd be that much dust on the table.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that would last. It'd come in you don't know whether it's a rainstorm or a tornado or what's behind this thing, but all it was is just a mild dust storm. That's all it was.
And what years were these in, John?
That was in 1932 up to 1936.
Okay.
It's about 4 years of it, but it's just once a month or something like that come in. It had come in from the west.
And what were the contributing factors that made those dust storms so so common?
And
he doesn't understand.
It was a lot of fun after it left.
Okay. Okay. But what were the things that caused the dust storm? Why did it blow? Why doesn't it do it as much now?
Put
the mic up here.
It would still be a dust storm, but they got implements to prevent it. It was a drought. And the dust is very fine. It's so fine, it's not like a sandstorm. There's two different things. Sandstorm blowing on your land now, that's sand. But the dust is so fine. You can see the particles in like you look in a sunshine through a window. You can see movement in that.
Okay, like the dust inside a window. Yeah. Okay. And I think John was hitting on important things. It was a very dry time during those years, and then they were moldboard plowing. That was before the chisel plow came into use. And the chisel plow left more of the residue up on top, and it left it a lot less vulnerable to blowing. Okay?
We were attending Poplar School, which is over there east of the Fritz Warnken place on the corner. And one day, the dust cloud moved in. It got so dark that the teacher dismissed school. We couldn't see to do our schoolwork. We didn't have electric lights in the house. That I think was in 1935 or 36.
Okay. Anyone have any questions about Dust Bowl? I don't. I appreciate that, John. That was the helpful story. Anyone here have questions about that?
I was told that this dust was seen as far east as the East Coast, and it kind of got the attention of the legislators in Washington.
Okay. Any questions about the dust storm? That's just kind of a little bit of a side trip, but that's good. Who was Elizabeth Kidd Dan Miller?
Elizabeth.
Okay. Maybe this was a mistyping here, but was there a Kidd Dan Miller or something?
Yes.
Okay. This might have just got slipped in the wrong place. But who was Kidd Dan Miller? I saw that name come up different times, I think.
He was Dad's brother, just younger.
Okay, and they called him Kidd Dan.
Yeah, they started calling him that in his family. He was, I think Dad started as much as anybody, if I'm told right. He was his kid brother, so he became Kidd Dan.
Okay. Okay, Kidd Dan would have been Dad and Perry and Lizzie's uncle, Dan. Okay. Okay. Well, I think that's helpful on how crops were or how things were marketed, those kinds of things. And I don't think we're going to get clear around the questionnaires. Where was the... was there a burger joint called HIP or HIP?
HIPP.
Do you want to say about that? Let me just read what Edwin said about that. Edwin can't be here, and Edwin has a good memory on some of these things. Once a year, we got a turn to go with Dad to town, and often we got ice cream cones. HIP, was it HIP? Had hamburgers, 4 for 25 cents. It was located on West Main and Avenue B. It's B in Maine, I think. Mom seldom went to town, and if she went, she never went alone. We took the buggy usually, and sometimes the wagon if necessary to haul goods. This is talking about something about your trips to town. Lizzie Schrock mentioned that the children would go along by turns maybe to help hold the horse. One of you others mentioned that you'd help hold the horse while your dad would run in to do the business or whatever. Fred, you said your family went to town once a week, and how often would the children get to go along with on a trip to town, would you say?
Well, I don't know for sure just how often they would have went to the, of course this was to do the delivering the things once a count.
When you were selling.
Yeah, when we were selling, but I don't know, we'd have went or the, oftener than that too sometimes, I think, but
this was the one that they always went, you know.
Okay, so once a week there was a town trip, but then, but how often would Fred get to go along with Levi to sell?
Not very often.
And some of you others were saying that you went maybe once a year on a trip to town, and different ones of you. Sadie, I would like to hear what you were saying about some of your town trips, if you would.
Thank you.
Was there special things that would happen or that your dad would do for you the days that you got to go along to town, some of those kind of details?
Yeah, we had our turns going. And then we'd go to that little restaurant and get, I thought it was a nickel for a hamburger. And then we'd get some ice cream cone. And
okay.
We'd always have our turns going.
Uh-huh.
One time we went to see a parade. That's the only time I remember. One of the neighbors took us to town. We saw a parade.
Okay. Okay, that's very interesting. Do different ones of you remember that it was special enough when you got to go along to town that you would do something like an ice cream cone or a hamburger or that kind of thing? Was that fairly common when it was David's turn to go to town or Melvin's turn that you might have gotten something special when you went then? Mary is nodding her head. Anyone else want to talk anything about the town trips? Perry, I wish you would grab the mic and tell us a little bit about the livery stable and where the horses were parked and kind of just give a... I think this generation here, when they think of going to town, they might think of going up around between 11th and 17th east of Lorain, and that's town. But tell them where town was when you were growing up.
Well, there was a livery stable right where Midwest Feed was in recent years. And that was quite a big building, and it, of course, had a roof, and the people would drive in, unhitch their horses, feed them, go do their shopping, and then come back. And it seemed to us little folks that this was a real deal when we got to go along for something that special.
Okay, and some of the businesses were Dillon's there, where the Salvation Army is now,
right.
In Maine. You're familiar
right.
with that part of town.
Yeah.
And then there was was it Reno Implement? Or
Reno Implement, right where, well, as long as I remember, it was right where Westlake Hardware is now.
Okay, and when did Smith's Market come into being?
Well,
1933 they have on their truck.
Okay.
Yeah.
Vera, do you have any more details about the town trip? And a lot of commerce centered around that approximately be in Maine. They would park, the livery stable was where they hitched their horses, and then they could walk and do their business and bring their stuff back to the buggy or to the wagon.
Yeah, that was what I was going to
go ahead.
Refer to, that we left our horses down there at the livery stable. But then we walked up to Cress's and Grant's and Woolworth's to do our shopping. And that was up in, which street was that on? Between 3rd and 4th? 2nd and 3rd.
Yeah,
2nd and 3rd.
Yeah.
Okay. Was Cress a drugstore?
No, Cress was a 5 and 10 store.
Department store.
Yeah.
5 and 10.
And... when I think of the times that we went up there and bought our things that we wanted to have and carried them, we carried them down to the barn then, the livery stable.
Yeah.
And that is so foreign, you people can't think how that would be.
There used to be a little vegetable stand between
Main Street. Oh, Hartzell's. Yeah.
Maria Teller. Well, I just remember there was a little vegetable place that they had there between Main Street and Delivery Barn that we would sometimes stop to get some vegetables.
Okay, Hartzell's, did you say?
Hartzell's, okay. And they had, it was just a very quaint little store, just sort of a long type of a store, but they always... I think they always gave us candy when we went in there, and that was really special, too.
See, that would have been kind of a must stop then.
Yeah.
I have a livery stable question. Did you have to pay to leave your horses there?
Yes.
And did they provide feed, or did you take feed along?
We took it along.
Okay.
They had the water there.
Okay, so they provided water. And you provided feed, and how much did you have to pay?
Sorry, I don't know. 25 cents is what?
About 15 for one horse, I believe.
20 cents for a team and 15 cents for a horse, and could you leave them all day for that price?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you.
And how many teams were...
My dad said that the proprietor at the livery stable had been a personal friend of Jesse James. Do any of you remember that? Okay.
It was Osgood. That was his last name.
Repeat that.
Yeah, what was the
name? Osgood.
Osgood. Okay.
O-S-G-O-D.
Yeah, and I think that was the last name. I think he had a first name.
Osgood, but it didn't.
Dad said that this man said he doesn't know why he didn't go with that gang. He was a good friend.
It might have been a true story, and you might have had a lot of time on his hands to come up with good stories. Okay. Anything else on the livery stable days, Sam? Or something related about town trips? Just hand him the mic, yeah.
There was also a Montgomery Ward and Sears up in that area.
So downtown was really, really a major part. You could just do everything in that circle, and that's where people shopped. Fanny.
If you look, the name Cress is still on that store.
Was that on the east or the west side? I don't remember.
West side.
I remember the Cress store. I think I've been in it, but I couldn't even tell you. I could tell you about where in the block, but I couldn't even tell you.
Cress and Grant were on the west side, and Woolworth's was on the east side.
Did Cress have a soda fountain where you could buy a meal in there or not? No. Okay.
I think they had ice cream and things like that. I don't know that you
Well,
could
I
get
almost
a
think I remember seeing Raymond Wagner in the Cress store eating something once, but I don't know. A fountain or something, ice cream. Okay, the younger generation is saying that, and so maybe that was after you, after your time. That was after Bill was on to bigger and better things. Okay, this is very helpful. Anything else that you'd like to say? Okay, Mary had mentioned that there was, she thought it, at her memory, the hamburgers were 10 cents and pop was 5 cents. Okay, well, I think that's enough on the town trips, and some of these things keep kind of circling back and forth in the different stories, so we're going to keep going. Vera, go ahead.
A lot of you talked about selling your eggs at the grocery store. We always sold hatching eggs.
Okay.
And that was at Mallory's Hatchery.
Okay, Mallory's Hatchery, I think you'd mentioned that you sold hatching eggs, and someone had a different name. Stewart Hatcheries, I think you had said,
well,
Bill.
Well, Stewart Hatchery was before
Before
Mallory.
Mallory's, okay. And where was Mallory's located?
Same place.
No, but where was Stewart? I mean, where are the two?
Stewart owned it before Mallory.
Yeah, but it was on west.
West of the livery.
East of the livery, wasn't it?
East of the livery, but right along B Street there.
Yeah,
okay.
On B Street.
Huh. Go ahead.
Yeah, somebody, I'm trying to remember the name of the hatchery before Stewart had it, but I can't come up with it. Maybe somebody else can. But
I don't.
They weren't the first ones to be in there. I remember.
Adam and Eve?
Pop Stewart told me the story one time, how they acquired it.
Okay.
There is
one
thing I'd like to mention sometime. Yeah. This may not be the time.
Go ahead.
One thing that I wished I had mentioned in the questionnaire. Cattle were mostly moved by rail in those days. There were a lot of cattle cars on the railroads, and there was a stockyards for shipment both at the north end and the south end of Partridge on both rail lines, and there was also stockyards over here at Whiteside. And on shipping day, why, the farmers would take their hogs, at least, to Partridge and ship them to Kansas City. And then they would buy things from Partridge. Partridge was kind of a thriving little town at the time. They had a lumber yard, they had hardware, and they had grocery stores in Partridge. But when the automobiles became common, Partridge kind of lost out.
Okay, Partridge was too close to Hutchinson, and when transportation became easy, it kind of cost, and Partridge lost out. Okay, let's move on to the kinds of things that you bought when you went to town. I thought this was interesting, and we'll keep moving through here. What were the kinds of things that you would have considered staples that your families bought when they went to town? What were the kinds of things?
I would say flour and sugar, and those were some of the basic things. Dad was always very good about bringing home something that Mom didn't have on her list, and that was pretty special. And we often had fresh bananas to eat. And, of course, the fruit didn't grow as well here in Kansas as it does in some places, and that was another reason why I think that we had bananas to eat a lot of the times.
Okay, pass it to Lizzie here, please, Lizzie Schrock.
Bananas was something that my dad just about always brought home. Just depend on it.
Okay. It was something that you said was your daddy's weakness or something like that. I mean, or I don't know how you said it here, but anyway, his habit.
I was still, as a little child, I was glad that sometimes it wasn't too unusual for Dad to bring a candy home. And that was something that was special, but he would bring, it wasn't unusual if he'd bring something.
Okay, pass that to Sadie. Sadie has something. Would you go ahead and say what types of things that your parents got in town, your dad got in town?
Well, he got the basics like flour and sugar, and usually brought a bunch of bananas too. And he always had candy. We'd always run for the buggy when he came home, forget the candy.
Okay, Vera May, you mentioned that you would also get tomatoes to can. Was that something that you would get at that produce store? Pass it back over here.
Smith's Market, as I remember, we got our canning tomatoes. We used a lot of tomatoes because that was our regular morning breakfast, was tomato gravy. And so we had to have quite a bit of tomatoes canned, and we didn't have the ability to irrigate like you do nowadays. It was just simply the windmill, and then let it gravity flow, and the time you think you'd have flowing down a row while you come out there and it's going down into a molehill and you just can't win.
Okay,
apples too. We always had canned apples, applesauce.
Okay, do you have any idea how many quarts of tomatoes you would need to can, or how many quarts of juice you would need to can in a year or 40 years?
Oh, I can't remember numbers.
Okay, Lizzie Wagler, I think you were talking about a typical breakfast. What was a typical breakfast on your when you were growing up?
Tomato gravy and eggs, and sometimes if we had butchered hogs, we had liverwurst. And
fried mush,
yeah.
Okay. How many of you young people, students here, eat a lot of tomato gravy in your homes? Some? Okay. How many of you ate a lot of tomato gravy for breakfast in your homes? Okay. Somewhere I gathered that was a pretty major staple in breakfast time for a lot of you people, and it was interesting to me to see Vera say that they would buy tomatoes to interesting to me to see Vera say that they bought tomatoes Do you remember when you started using tomatoes regularly, or was that something as long as you could remember there was tomatoes around?
That was
And you would try to raise them, but if there weren't enough, you would buy them. Does that
right.
sound right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Lizzie Schrock says she doesn't remember buying them, but that's interesting. I don't know where this was. William, I think you said something about catfish. No? Was it Sam? Tell us about that, whoever was talking about catfish.
I don't remember the catfish, but we used to get kegs, 50-pound kegs, I think, of salted fish.
Oh, okay.
That
okay.
was shipped in from the northeast somewhere. And these, of course, were salted for to keep. And then, of course, we had to put them in water to get the salt out so it would be fit to eat. And those fish weren't filleted. They were...
So you got the bones with them.
We got the bones with them. We had to take.
Okay, and on things that you bought in town, Barbara Yoder mentioned that you would get the saltine-type crackers in big boxes.
Yes, I wonder if other people remember that, too, but I think I'm right that they were very big boxes that we'd get crackers. You don't remember, Fred?
Well, yeah, it's a big box.
I thought it was... Yeah, it was...
It took a big box of crackers in the hill, yeah.
It seems to me it...
Okay, Amos, what would you like to add?
Well, we had a different breakfast than probably... Well, I don't know what all the others ate, but... My mom and dad, we had plenty to eat, but it was wheat and flesh. It was ground wheat, and then whatever meat we had and so on. And my mom was so embarrassed when some of the neighbors would come by and see what we had for breakfast. Dad said, well, I'm not ashamed. If our children would be tiny and all that stuff, why, we'd have a reason to feel bad about it. But we grew up on ground wheat. And whatever meat Mom made for us, and jelly bread of any kind of, yeah, jelly, and it, well, anyhow, none of us went hungry.
Okay, well, that's very helpful. Sam, do you have something to add?
That would have been cream of wheat. I remember getting 100 pounds of cream of wheat for the family.
Okay, you may have noted that on your questionnaire. I don't remember.
For cereal, we had ground wheat, Graham. That we didn't buy our cereal.
Okay, John, you mentioned that you ate some cornflakes when you were growing up. Was that a common breakfast?
Did you buy cornflakes to eat?
Oh yes, and wheat too.
Yeah, he eats a lot.
So you had corn? Was it Wheaties or was it? But nope. You got cornflakes in boxes.
In boxes. Yes, you may be interesting. When we married, I went to the grocery store, me and my wife. We took four big sacks of groceries to get started. $3.25.
$3.25.
But where did the $3.25 come from? I'm surprised I had it.
Okay, four big grocery sacks to start up your the housekeeping, and it was it cost the unsumly or the huge fee of $3.25, but the surprise was that he had the money to pay for it.
1935,
but you still had a little left over from husking corn, huh? Okay, I don't know if this comes up. This comes up on some of the questionnaires, and I think it's a little bit later, but I'm crossing it here, so I'm going to ask about it. Edwin said something about the coal. You heated with coals. You had base heaters. Is that what you called them?
Base burners,
okay, and you heated with coal. Would that get delivered from Hutchinson, or how did you get the coal out to your places?
Actually, I had to just hand it up.
Well, I think we got ours basically from Partridge. Partridge used to have bins, and there was a time when I had helped unload the boxcar to those bins.
Okay, when you helped unload, it would come in on a big boxcar.
Or a
coal car, okay. And then they would put it in a storage, and then people would be able to buy it out of there. Where was that located? Was that on the Santa Fe or on the Rock Island? Santa Fe. Where from where the co-op is now?
Just west of the elevator.
West of the elevator is where the coal got unloaded.
Whiteside also had
a coal. You know all about it. Was this Colorado coal, or where did this coal come from?
I don't know. No, they had the hard coal and the soft coal, and the base burner would use the hard coal, and they had a magazine. You'd pour the coal in up the top, it would gradually feed down, and you could see the red coals. It had, what would you call it, icing glass, made a real nice effect, a nice warm look, and it's considered a little better stove, I guess, than the old soft coal burning stoves.
Okay, so but you would go to Partridge to pick up the coal and then bring it out to your place. You would haul your own coal; it wasn't delivered out. Okay.
Scoop them on and load them also.
Okay, and how much coal did it take for a winter? How often did you have to go get more coal? Do you have any idea? And how much would you haul? Fred says about two times. Would you go with a team and a wagon?
Oh, yeah.
Would it have been like your grain boxes or?
Yes.
52-bushel box wagon, and maybe twice a year anyway. And this would gravity feed down into the burners, and they had whatever that icy glass that wouldn't burn, that you could see the flame. Go ahead, Barbara.
It's just so nice to have that one room. It's always warm. I mean, in the mornings, I think the workman dad did something to get it going better or something maybe, but yes, we have that one room warm day and night.
Okay, and was that the living room typically?
Yes.
Okay.
Something that happened at home, I remember, is that we could have the kitchen stove that had wood burning, of course, and we could have that going in the evening, and by the next morning it could be cold enough in there that we had ice on the water that had been heated in the evening.
Okay.
That gives you a little bit of an idea what we were talking about when we talk about old cold houses.
That was before there was much insulation used.
That's right.
Maybe while we're on heating, tell us a little bit about how you're, someone else, Orpha, you haven't spoken much, pass it to her, or from this table is fine. Whatever, okay. Your stoves in the kitchen, how were those typically? Were those, did you have oil stoves, or did you have wood stoves, or how did you cook in the kitchen?
Well, the first I remember was we put wood in to bake, to cook things. But then I don't think that lasted very long in my life anymore, and we got a smaller stove that I'm not sure what it burned, but
kerosene
probably.
Okay, do most of you remember heating, that you had a wood cook stove? That was fairly typical, and then at some point they were changing over to the kerosene cook stoves. Is that what you're saying?
I think that was more used in the summertime.
Yes,
in the summertime.
So you would have used both of them at the same time, but you would have used kerosene in the summer when you didn't want to heat things up, the whole house. We didn't want to heat up the house as much. Okay? Anyone else want to talk about, we've kind of bounced from subject to subject here, we're still on But that's fine. Okay.
There's something I want to add. This
go
is
ahead.
Quite different. One big disappointment I had being sick when I was a child was that I had measles the day that my Aunt Emma, my mother's sister Emma, and John Mast got married. And I so much wanted to go to the wedding, but there I lay in bed.
Measles, you say? John, she's saying that they missed your she missed your wedding with the measles.
Orpha missed your wedding. She had measles.
Huh?
Yeah.
She couldn't make it to your wedding, and she wanted to. Okay. Sources of income. Lizzie here mentioned something, and this is even, I heard some stories about Will Miller and the thrashing machine. What, tell us just a little bit about that.
Well, there was also a thrashing ring that he had a thrashing machine run with a steam engine, and he would go from one place to the next until it was all the way around. And when he'd come home, it would be fun to go out and pull that string to make the whistle go.
If they left it
where us boys were and some more boys, well, it was always fun to go out there after everybody left and we could enjoy the music.
Let a little air out of the whistle, huh? Okay, that's helpful. Let's move on to the question five. Who did you do business with? And I think we've covered a bunch of that, the places that you bought in town and the places that you traded or bartered things. Sam, do you want to say something?
How many remember Borsky?
Okay, I was going to ask about Harry Borsky next. So introduce Harry Borsky to these people.
He came around with his truck, I think, and then they carried bowl after bowl after bowl, sitting, put it on the kitchen table, and there the women folks took out what they wanted, and he I don't know sure just what all how all they dealt.
But it was dry goods.
Dry
material,
goods they brought out
like
on the
materials
kitchen.
That this, and he was a Jewish peddler. Is that what?
Well, I imagine.
Okay.
Then also there was a fellow, I'm not sure some of you could tell me what the name of that fellow was that came around with groceries.
Oh, yeah.
And groceries and fruit and peddled them around the neighborhood.
Perry, you mentioned fruit peddlers. Do you know a name?
I can't remember the name, but I remember the price of the bananas, six pounds for a quarter. That cost too much for, we didn't have them very often.
Okay.
Suckers were a penny a piece,
Mary is saying. Okay.
Harry Borsky was at our place one time, and he was quite a talker. And he had these goods that said, "Wears like iron, never wear out." And my dad said, "I'd like to have a new shirt once in a while."
Okay. Someone mentioned, it may have been you, that he circulated through Amish communities. Would he go like from northern Indiana to Iowa to Kansas? Is that what, okay? I see people nodding their heads on that. So, okay, what would you like to, there was the Coke and Raleigh products were Watkins already. That was up even until my days that Charles Hart sold the Watkins products, but... Okay, fruit peddlers, was that just in season? They would come by occasionally, or?
He became something of a grocery peddler, actually.
Okay.
Bananas, anything like that? And
we had this little fellow with smoke, and then one of my brother Moses said, why do you smoke? Well, I keep fire under my nose to keep it warm.
I keep fire under my nose to keep it warm was the peddler's reason for smoking. Okay. Let's move on to the next page, commerce, enterprise, and self-sufficiency. Lizzie was talking, just describe a little bit how it went when the threshing was all done.
Well, they all came together to, and they, each of them had their amount that of bushels that they had thrashed, and they settled up. That was, I think, Dad took their word for what they said.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, actually, there was a weigher on the machine, and it would weigh out those bushels. And was it a half a bushel? And then there was a tally, so they could keep track. Something else I remember hearing that Will Miller was supposed to have gotten about $100 for one day of thrashing, and that was really big money.
Okay. Well, that would probably be like $1,000 or $2,000 today. I don't know, but okay.
Don't remember.
On the next page, commerce, enterprise, and self-sufficiency, other things. Barbara mentioned about a beef ring. We've talked about that some. Mary Yoder here was talking about the grocery truck, this man that sold the fruit and bananas, and she also remembered at 6 pounds for a quarter. And the big suckers were a penny each. So, okay, and William, pass the mic to William. Mention some of what you have on your paper there, where you, this was back business back in Hutchinson, basically. Where you did business. On the bottom of page, I don't know what page it is, but it's under question number 7 under commerce, enterprise, and self-sufficiency. Who was this Ray Gump?
Someone.
He had a wholesale at North on 7th on the Main Street, just that little alley.
Okay.
And Dad got a lot of things from him.
And what was this hippo shandy thing?
Hip. That was hip screen shandy.
Okay, hip. Okay. And there you could get the soup with oyster crackers?
Yes.
Okay. And that cost a dime?
Yes.
Okay. Very well. Okay, well, let's move on. What possessions did you or others value? Barbara, what were some of the things that you valued? This is moving on down your questionnaire if you want to follow.
Okay, it's comforts and discomforts, but what was that? Excuse me, I'm not right for the right page.
What possessions did you or others value?
Well, values was the books. Book to me, excuse me. To me, books were valued much, and we had good reading, some good reading in our home. We got some Mennonite, like Youth Christian Companion, and we were getting some of those.
Okay.
But I especially remember my great aunt Mattie Knisley.
Okay, Mattie Knisley's name came up many times. Explain to us who Mattie Knisley was.
Was Grandpa Knisley's older sister, excuse me.
Grandpa Knisley, Dan Knisley, there were 4 brothers and a younger sister, but there were several older sisters who were just half-sisters. And Mattie was one of those, the only one that I really knew. But she was a very much of a good Samaritan. She had a vision for, she handed out many Egermeyer's Bible story books to her grandnieces and nephews.
This came up in the questionnaires, the different ones we were talking about, Aunt Mattie mm-hmm. and the Egermeyer Bible story books.
But she wasn't only, she had Moody Bible
press books.
That, a little closer to
Moody, Moody Press, and we could go and borrow these from her and then bring them back to her. But that was so wonderful to me because we didn't, and we had some good stories. For, books from the library and in school too. I think, but it was just. But she was also only not only interested in helping, she was helping some of her. I guess some of the others could tell more about that than I can. But she helped her nieces, in going about in their homes and helping them.
Okay.
And she wasn't married, and it was unusual for us to have anyone in the community that wasn't married. But she was a person that really liked to help other people.
Okay, Amos has a comment. Go ahead, grab the mic.
She was a little lady. She was a rather tiny person. And she'd walk from up there where Claire and Barbara live down to our place or over to Sam Nye's or wherever. But she was not a globetrotter exactly, but she was willing to go somewhere.
Well, there's still ladies that walk up and down these roads. But Sam?
She would go across the corner to Dan Nye's and Jake Yoder's. And would walk through the fields for that.
Mm-hmm. And Lizzie was talking about going over to their place, so that would be right. Some of you younger ones. She would have lived over here where Julian's live. She would have walked to places like...
Where Oatney's are.
Where Oatney's are, to where Titus's live, to where Amos's live, to...
Over where Marlon's...
Okay, right over here east of here to where Dad would have grown up at the first place east by where Edwin's had lived. Okay, Lizzie Schrock, you said that you like nice dishes and your mother had good dishes. Where did these dishes come from? Pick up the mic, please.
Well, what she got from home and I don't know that there were any... Probably weren't as special as dishes are now, the fine china, but they were good dishes, and I still like dishes.
Okay.
Tried to be careful with them.
What possessions did you or others value? I'm going to just run down over some of the others. John Mass said real estate. Mary Yoder said almost anything. We didn't have much. And that, I think, is an insightful comment. Perry Miller, pocket watches and good horses. Sam Nisley, horse and buggy. Okay, who did you feel loyal to or responsible for? Let's just keep moving. The next question two. Barbara, we felt loyal to our parents, our families, our schools, our church. Many of you mentioned parents or family, those kinds of things. You had a loyalty to your parents or family. One person I think mentioned schools. I think this was Barbara. Was there a school rivalry between Poplar and East Eureka and Elmhurst?
Didn't have competition.
You didn't have. Okay, Perry says he didn't have competition like competitive sports back then. This is getting a little bit out of line. Pass the mic to Sadie, if you would, please. But when we're on schools here, just a little bit.
We did have ciphering matches.
That's right. Ciphering matches. Explain how those were, Mary.
Well, we would go up on the blackboard and they would give us arithmetic problems and we would see who could write down the answer the fastest. And Vernon Yoder was one that was almost always on the ball.
Vernon Yoder, was that your brother? Okay, Fanny and I's brother Vernon was a... was quick on the trigger with math questions.
He usually had the answer till he was done.
He usually had the answer by the time he was done figuring it out, she says. Perry, did you have a comment? Okay, Sadie, tell us about school and your interactions. How did it go when you got your diploma from eighth grade? That's not on this page. I'm kind of jumping around.
Oh, well, usually they got the diplomas in the mail.
Uh-huh.
And my neighbor, Mary Troyer, was in my class. And she, It was Mary Troy and Richard Evans were the ones in the class. So she came over and asked if we could go to town to this graduation. And I didn't think they'd let me go, but they did. So we went out there for the graduation, and we enjoyed it. And I heard them singing Home on the Range for the first time, I remember.
Okay, was that already then the state song?
I don't know.
That might have been sung because of that. What year was it that you got your eighth grade diploma, Sadie?
Oh, I don't even remember.
Was that at the convention hall?
Okay, well, she remembers that her two classmates and Richard Evans would have been a prominent figure in that community for many years. And this Mary Troyer, was she around her then?
Hirschberger's live now.
Where Dan Hirschberger's
live? Yeah.
Okay. Perry, you have a comment.
Well, I was just going to say we sometimes got together, but we didn't have leagues like they did later. Uh-huh. And when get together and for an afternoon or so and had some, you know, we're back and forth some. I think we boys argued a lot more about who had the best tractor than we did about schools.
Okay, William mentioned that, have I jumped a page here? Yeah, I think I have. Let's go ahead and move to the page where, who did you admire and why? And I'll just pick out a few of those, and I may just go ahead and give those and keep moving on. Lizzie mentioned this great Aunt Maddie, who you've discussed now. She loved to give the children's books, especially Eggermeyer Bible story books. When she would come, she would wash the dishes and feed the dog. She wanted to befriend the dog. She would come walking. You were talking about that, how she did a lot of walking. William mentioned that he admired Mary, Enos Mary. It was her gentleness and her kindness. And this would have been...
My wife was wonderful.
Oh, Elizabeth wrote this. Okay, I'm sorry. Very well. And that would have been your aunt as well, is that right? Or aunt by marriage? Aunt by marriage, yeah. Okay. Perry Miller, our ministers, because they gave us hope. And Sam Nisley said the Levi Miller boys. I don't know why that was. Okay, what experiences or opportunities did you treasure? Barbara, are you on that page now, or can someone help her get on that page? Question number 4.
My questions aren't numbered. Is it? Now what?
Are you finding it there?
Yeah, but I'm not sure what you're
Okay, asking. What experience or opportunities did you treasure? Maybe I'll just quickly read this. This is a quote from Barbara's. The opportunity to have Sunday school. We also had had Bible school, German in the springtime for about 2 weeks after the term of regular school dismissed. Other opportunities, visiting the neighbors, church families with children our age, opportunity to go elsewhere for voluntary service. I served in Gulfport, Mississippi, etc. Elizabeth Schrock, to go visit the cousins, experiences or opportunities you treasured. Fred Nisley, a fast horse. John Mast, hunting. What kind of things did you hunt, John? Tell us a little about your hunting. Pass the mic.
Tell us about what you like to hunt.
Oh, what I like to hunt?
Yeah.
Oh, my. Jackrabbits. Pretty girls. I got a card from a friend. And he was here visiting, and he says, he sent me a card. He says, Kansas is noted for jackrabbits, pretty girls, fountain pens. That's what he had to say about that. But what I like to hunt is something that is hard to get. There's not interesting to hunt a pet or something like that. Something that's hard to get, and that's a coyote. Yeah. I'd rather hunt a coyote than eat a chicken dinner. Enough said.
Okay, well, there's a lot of coyotes around this winter. I don't know if you've been noticing that, but it seems there's just a lot of coyotes around. And David Yoder, I think, lost most of his this year's sheep crop to coyotes, apparently. But anyway, that's another story. Perry mentioned his opportunities to travel and the chance that they had to do voluntary service in Puerto Rico. I think that was something that was kind of ahead of the game in a way, but it was a blessing, and it helped open the windows or the eyes of the community with some of those experiences. William Nisley, neighbors each making a freezer of ice cream and getting together for the evening. Sam Nisley, neighbors working together, trying and learning to do new things. Sadie, going to school. Mary also enjoyed the neighbors. Etc., etc. Okay, what seemed beautiful to you? I will maybe just pull out some highlights here, different ones that mentioned. John Mast, a nice day is beautiful for John Mast. Flowers, they still are and do, Mary over here. Perry Miller, Singspiration, and I think I remember one of Perry's brothers talking about this already, that well, some people enjoy singing more than some of the rest of us do, or something like that. Anyway, Sadie Nisley, flowers, garden, baby calves, baby chicks, or new baby siblings. What kind of flowers? Does anyone want to? What kind of flowers were common back when you were growing up? Can some of you ladies fill us in on that? Vera? Okay, a lot of lilac bushes, Sadie is saying. Vera, do you have a comment, or are you passing it on?
We had roses on our fence there between the yard and the garden, yellow roses, the old-fashioned kind that just bloomed once a year. But they were very, very special to us. And on the inside of the fence there, we had iris. And I asked Aunt Lizzie and Aunt Edna if they have any idea when those were planted there, and they said they've been there for as long as they could remember. And of course, we just have a little strip of the roses left anymore, but that was something that was special to me, that as far back as they could remember, so it would have been 70, 80 years that those were there.
Okay, let's move on. What goals did you or others have? Barbara mentioned to improve the courtship standards of the church young people, to live for the Lord and to uphold the church standards. Lizzie Schrock here, I like school, but I don't remember wishing for more than grade 8. I don't remember. I guess if you can learn it all in 8 years, why bother with more? Fred liked to break horses, to ride and train to pull a buggy. Mary Yoder, doing our best, whatever it was. What goals? Good Christian homes. Perry, Sunday school job, traveling. Sadie, growing up and doing new things. Other values. Dad, why don't you tell a little bit what happened when you were a big family of boys and you had some uncles and aunts with younger families? How were ways that you were pulled into service with Uncle Minnie's and some of those? Do you have a comment then, Orpha?
Well,
let him fit first and then you can be ready. Go ahead.
Yes, our family was older than Minnie's family or Uncle John's family. And so it was fairly common that we boys would spend time during the week. And usually we herded cows along the road. And can you imagine that the road there toward Pleasant View would be suitable to herd cows on either side of the road along the ditches? Well, that's what we did. And at John's, I would herd cows, and Raymond Utsi would come out and join us, and Edward Helmuth sometimes, and Albert sometimes would go along. And we would take the cows east on that road,
past where the Amish community building is, all the way to the East Road, the Whiteside Road, and west. And we'd also go south, past up over as far south as Levi Helms, where John Earl lives now.
And okay.
Could I make an observation? Weren't there usually fences along?
Oh yes. Oh yes, they had to be.
Okay, so there was fences along the property lines or between the crops, and so there was this ditch with all of this grass going to waste, and we just as well have our cattle growing eating that pasture. Okay, Orpha.
Well, this is kind of an addition to number three. Who did you admire and why?
Yeah.
I admired people who were kind or friendly to me, and I'd like to tell the story of...
Put your mic a little closer, not really.
I'd like to tell the story of some visitors that we had one day. My parents had people for dinner. One happening when I was just a young girl was when preacher Noah Mast and his wife, they were John Mast's parents, brought some out-of-state visitors to my parents' place for dinner one day. After we were all finished eating in the dining room, I went to the kitchen and started washing the dishes. Before long, Noah Mast came out and started drying the dishes, and we had conversation while we were doing the dishes. Don't ask me what we talked about, I don't remember. But I remember so well how I felt about Noah Mast giving up the time that he could have spent in the dining room having interesting conversations with the others, but came and helped me do the dishes.
Okay. Harry, can you relate a little of that? John, did you catch that?
She said that your folks had brought visitors to beat wagers.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and then your dad went out and helped her do the dishes.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I got out of there.
Okay, maybe we'll keep moving, and I will pick up just a few quotes here from your papers, and we'll keep moving through real quickly. Comforts and discomforts of your home. We've already talked about some of that. John Mast says the house was old and cold. Fred says it was warm. No. Warm in winter, hot in summer. I think that was probably cold in winter and hot in summer. How did you deal with some of this? I think Lizzie Schrock mentioned that they would put the pillows in the windows and sleep, you know, almost partly outside. Different ones of you talked about, or someone talked about, I think, wetting the sheets so it would be a little bit cooler. And then you boys would sleep outside fairly often if it was just too hot inside. Did quite a few of you do that? Okay, Fred did that. And then in the winter, it just tended to be pretty cold. Sam says it was cold and hot. Maybe I'll just move on there. What foods did you eat, produce yourself? Edwin says they would have had potatoes, field corn. And did you put up field corn like we do sweet corn today? Is that right? Okay, I'd understood that may have been done. Peaches from north of town. Was that, do you remember picking peaches or getting peaches north of town? Pear trees. Would a lot of you have had pear trees in your own yards? I see people nodding their heads here. No, but some of you would have had pear trees. Levi and Isley's possibly. Took wheat to mill in Partridge and got flour. Was that at Stuckey Mill? They would grind wheat into flour, and then what about your Graham, your wheat that you made into cereal? Do you want to talk about that, Fred? Was that all there?
No, we usually got over to Will Miller's. He had a grinder, did custom grinding. That's where we got it done, for Graham, what we called it.
Okay. Okay, very well. Lizzie Schrock said that a lot of your clothes were made out of feed sacks that were dyed. Do a lot of you remember that? Okay, there's people that remember that. Okay. Perry talks about clothes. They were homemade and scarce, and they were hand-me-downs. Okay. John Mass clothes were dirty. Okay. Vera talks about feed sacks that were dyed as well. What did you do for fun? What were some of the games that you played? Just grab a mic and say a few. What types of things did you do?
Hide and seek.
Hide and seek.
There were enough of us that we could choose up sides.
Their family was big enough they could field a softball team with just the boys. There was 9 boys in that family.
Ten.
Well, the mic is close. I'd like to have John tell the bumblebee story then.
Okay.
How they played with
bumblebees. Okay.
Tin can Nurkey.
Andy Over. I'll just mention some others that were mentioned here. Darebase Winkum. What was Winkum?
That was something that we played quite often. When we went to the cousins, they played. One guy would hide himself, and then there were one person was me. They'd give him away. It's what they call someone had another name for it.
Beckon.
Yeah. And then you look for the, then he'd give away, and so they're trying to get all the people, I guess.
If someone freed you by giving you a wink, then you could run off at the base if the person who was hit didn't see you or something. That was probably like the whistle winker wave. Okay, John, we're having a request for a story about how you used to play with bumblebees.
Bumblebees?
Do you know a story about bumblebees, how you used to play with bumblebees?
I know to stay away.
Okay, well, that's good.
Somebody would stir up a bumblebee nest?
I had an uncle. He told me he wanted to show the bees to me. He took me out where the bees were and stirred around, you know, shaked a little bit, you know, and nothing happened. And he went back very much disappointed. I thought they'd come out and sting you, and they didn't do a thing.
Somebody'd stir up a bumblebee nest, and then you would defend yourselves.
I never see
it. When they used a shingle to use shingles to defend themselves.
Ich verstehe es nicht. The shingles.
Well, I don't know for sure how it worked.
Okay. Somebody with enough courage to go up and stir up the bumblebees, the others would surround the bumblebee nest with a legal size shingle.
If the evening wouldn't be long enough to get me started, yeah. So I just better not start. But you talked about hunting. I should have said I bought 6,663 jackrabbits, one winner. Now that's enough.
Okay, I would like, while we're talking about that, jackrabbits are scarce enough now that when we see a jackrabbit, it's very unusual. But not so many years ago, probably 50 years ago, there was jackrabbits in enough numbers that they had a roundup and would set up snow fence and would chase out of a section or a couple of sections. Wasn't it over here at Dan Nisley's?
Yeah.
And they got how many hundreds of rabbits in that, jackrabbits in that enclosure, and were going in there and just clubbing them over the head.
And then they'd sell them.
And then they would sell them. And you said that, were you a broker? Were you buying jackrabbits for someone else?
I was buying jackrabbits for Bruce Childs, Dunkerton, Iowa. And he fed them to the minks.
Yeah.
They had to have jackrabbits, post toasties, and turkey heads all mixed up. That for a mink menu. And now the animal rights came in and cleaned him out. He can't do that anymore. But he had 1,000 of them.
And you sold 6,000 jackrabbits to him.
Yeah. I tell you.
What did you get for the jackrabbits? How much did they give you for the jackrabbits?
I'm sorry to say I didn't charge enough to make my living.
Okay, well, let's move on. There's not enough jackrabbits around to make that an enterprise now, so. What was a go-to home remedy when you were sick? What was a very common home remedy that was used when you were sick?
Vicks.
Vicks? What else? When you were sick, John, what did your mom feed you?
Oh, castor oil.
I figured I'd hear castor oil. Was it pretty tasty stuff? Pretty good stuff?
And it was successful.
Mary, you said you would use peppermint oil on wounds or on cuts or that kind of thing. Someone mentioned kerosene, I think, that was kind of a go-to thing. What was kerosene used for? What was it seen as what would it do?
One time we were topping milo by hand over here in the fields right close by, and I cut myself a little bit and didn't do much about it. One of my brothers, it must have been Edwin, he had a pretty nasty cut, and he went to the kerosene barrel and dosed it good with that, and his wound healed better than mine did, and it was a much more serious wound. I remember that.
There you have it. Kerosene and castor oil. Fix everything. Okay. Sadie talked about a mustard rubber plaster. Yes. Sometimes it would go to the doctor eventually. And then there was the more serious things, Levi's diabetes. I don't think anyone mentioned, but when Perry had his polio as a young child, and I've heard some of those stories, what grandpa's went through. You spent how much time in St. Louis as a young child?
As I recall, it was just a winter. It was just I had in mind several months. Isn't that right, Lizzie?
I think that's right.
Edwin says 4 months.
4 months. That sounds right.
Okay, I'm not sure where to go with this. This is after 9 o'clock. We have quite a few questions. What would any of you like to bring up yet in the things that you noted as you were going over these things? I'm going to open it here, and then I'm going to open it here from the students yet and see if there's something that you would like to pick up on yet on any of the other questions, unless we just know you want to have another evening of the same thing.
I can tell the story that's not on the questions.
Okay.
And this is something that I thought would interest this group. Pete Wagler's moved to Reno County from Ford County, I'm assuming in 1920 or thereabouts.
1921.
Well, okay. I was, the reason I thinking, anyhow, the children, which were Laura and Raymond and Willie, didn't really want to leave their place out there. And so the parents told them, they think if they move to Reno County, they'll have a little baby. And sure enough, that's what happened.
Well, that sounds like an interesting concept. Was this the little baby?
No, it was Malin.
It was Malin, okay, yeah. Okay.
Anyhow, the other thing I remember about hearing about Pete Wagler, he bought that home place from Leo Everett for $25,000, and the neighbors shook their heads and said, he'll never make it. But somehow he made it. And after some time, he bought another quarter across the road to the south, and he paid less than half of that much. And then eventually they got the quarter where Malin lived then. But the other thing that I heard, learned this from Pete himself, there were quite a few hedgerows on his quarter that he bought, and so he cut a lot of hedge, made hedge posts, and he sent them back to Davis County, Indiana. And so the success didn't come of itself. He was a hard worker.
And I think they said about those hedge posts that he guaranteed those posts for as long as he lived, but he didn't want to create a debt for his sons. So yeah. He just took
that,
it for...
That was the corner post.
Oh, the corner post. Okay. Okay. What celebrations did you observe? Christmas was often maybe an orange, a little candy, or those kinds of things. Some of you have rehearsed some of that. Farming... with horses, those kinds of things. How many horses did you have typically between driving horses and work horses in those days? Does someone have that in mind?
I would say we had as many as 10 to 12 horses and sometimes colts yet.
Some 10 to 12 horses, sometimes colts, Perry?
At one time, I remember we had 17 horses.
Okay.
Dad had hardly safe for him to go to a horse sale, and if a good horse didn't bring enough, he felt he wanted to bring it home.
Yeah. Okay. Very well. What other stories? What other things would you like to bring up that from anything we've talked about or whatever? Then we're going to give the students a chance. Go ahead.
How many know where 50 Highway went before it came out through here?
Okay, 50 Highway. You know where 50 Highway is over here? You know where 50 Highway used to be? Sam, tell us about it.
It's where 4th Street is now. It came all the way through town, and there was what we called a viaduct, what is now the overpass, and went out north of Sylvia. And if I remember right, I remember brick for that highway.
That's right.
Okay. Originally, Highway 50 was a brick highway. Something else that's interesting, just even in my memory, there was a filling station at Adams Corner, just around our corner and north, and then a little farther west along where Highway 14 and 4th Street is was Nibs Corner. Then I think there was a filling station at Huntsville Corner out there, and I'm not sure on west, and then it curved over and went to Sylvia. But Highway 50 then routed and basically dodged Hutchinson instead of coming all the way down 4th Street. And a lot of the business district, there was a lot of businesses along 4th Street. And when the route changed and whatever, there's still some businesses in there, but it's far different. There was tractor dealerships on 4th Street. Tractor Supply was there on 4th Street. Anyway. Okay. Anything else that, students, is there any story that as you studied, the things that you wrote that you would like to, I mean, that you were researching, that you would like to hear discussed yet briefly, and or just questions that you have from anything that came up? Do you have anything on you that, I mean, we kind of dodged around here, but do you have anything you'd like to ask?
For the law enforcement actions, I didn't get any answers on that, and I didn't know if there was any stories that you could come up with or not.
How did you deal with law enforcement? Was there anything that you knew? She didn't get any responses on that question. Chicken thieves, how were they dealt with? Was that an issue? What happened? How did you, Perry, grab this and give us a little on that?
Well, I remember there was a fellow from Pennsylvania, and he had to serve some time because of stealing chickens. That's about all I remember. But he changed, and he would talk about it after he made things right.
Anyone else briefly on things like that, law enforcement? How was that handled back then? Who else? Where did I go next for a question? Christy, do you have any questions?
I was curious a little bit more on what things you valued. A lot of the ladies talked about dishes. I guess a few of the men talked about some things. Like birthdays, did you do things? Were there gifts, that kind of thing, that were special or not necessarily?
Birthdays, was that something that you celebrated? Was what? How did you do a birthday? What was the situation? Fred here?
I'll tell you, we just didn't have hardly any money, during the 30s especially. And you know what we usually got for our birthday? My mother would usually bake an inch of food cake, then she'd have a little one, and then she'd make that especially for the one that had the birthday, and she'd put pink frosting on it.
Okay, any other memories relating to birthdays? Melvin, right here, Orpha.
Well, I got a little blue car for my birthday, just a little one, and I really liked that car, but somehow I got naughty with it and took it out, and I forgot where it was, and I lost it. But here in the last 10 years or so, we found that car all rusted up.
Didn't run anymore, huh?
No.
Okay, that's helpful. Stephen, do you have any questions you'd like to ask?
Could you explain a little bit the process of harvesting grain? Did you do all the reaping, and then how did that work?
Okay, harvesting grain. What was the process in grain harvest?
Well, it was just a little before my time. They had these, what they called headers. They had a platform in front and had horses in back pushing this thing. And then they had what they called the barge, which elevated on the barge. It was a low wagon. And they took it over to a spot in the field and made a big sack of it and pulled the thrashing machine there and thrash the grain there. But later, then we bound the wheat with a binder and shocked it, and that is when it came in where Will Miller had a thrashing crew, is my recollection of it.
Okay, so the headers took the heads and you made piles, and then you just took the thrashing machine to the piles and it was thrashed there. Later, Stephen, they made little bundles. Right?
Yeah.
Bundles, and then those bundles would be stacked together where they would shed water and not rot out the heads. And then the wagons would come along, the wagons with the horses to come along, and they would, with pitchforks, load up these wagons and take it to the central place where the Will Miller's threshing machine was set up, and they would feed it through the through there. But it wasn't a 24-foot header going at 5 miles an hour and kicking out 200 bushels an hour on that.
Yeah, I remember my Uncle David saying that this working on this header barge, and they had to fork all that by hand, and it was very, very hard work.
Okay. Lillian, do you have a question you'd like to have asked?
Could you tell a little bit more about your family life? Like, did you have daily chores or stuff like that?
Family life, daily chores. This could be ladies or men. Who wants to say what a typical day was like? Maybe from a lady first. What were your chores in the home?
I don't know how much I could say, but I did usually get up and help milking. We had milking cows. That there were different ones, so we had milked. And that we had, that's one of the things we did before breakfast, but I let someone else see where I
would. How many cows did you milk, Barbara?
Ten.
Around 10 cows, Fred says. Okay. What other types of work did you ladies do?
Tending chickens.
Okay. Chickens. Did all of you have laying hens? Okay. And so before you went to school, you would help milk cows often. And what time did school start?
9 o'clock.
Okay. Anything else, Lillian, you'd like to ask? Okay, Kendra, do you have anything? No? Susie? What about you, Carrie? No? Brandon, do you have a question?
Did you guys build a lot of new buildings, or like, was there a lot of building that happened?
Buildings, and I think that would be interesting to talk about what buildings were at the farmsteads, but did you remember helping build buildings, any buildings that are maybe here today even, or
Chicken house.
Take the mic and tell them about it.
Chicken house.
Okay, something that that was on a lot of your papers was the 48 storm, and a lot of the barns got damaged in 1948, and then there was a major crew, was it John D. Yoder that was running a crew? They went around fixing barn after barn. I think Melvin Nisley worked on those barns, and if I remember right, when they finished one or at some point, the story was told that Melvin Nisley stood on his head up on the peak of a barn. Is that right?
I think you have that mixed up with Jake Yoder that stood on top of his round silo rounded with feed, and he stood on his head and his legs sticking up in the air.
I think probably both stories are true.
I think both stories are true. Okay. Well, they live to tell the story, so that's the good part, I guess. It's 9:30. We could go on for hours yet. Joe, should we be pulling it together? I think we should. Well, I thank you all for the part that you had here. The papers that you filled out were very, very valuable, and I think that there will be a lot of information that the class will take off of that. Some of them may be contacting you for more details, I don't know, but this is very helpful, and I think that we could go with quite a few more evenings similar to this, but I appreciate everybody that participated. I'm going to turn it back to Miriam, or should we give a round of applause? Okay, Joe, I think there's refreshments, is that right? This was very, very interesting. I thank you, everybody, and I'm just sorry that we couldn't get around with more stories, but in 2 hours or two and a half, that we just didn't have the time. There's refreshments over here. Will you be bringing them in, or what are they going to be doing?
I think it'll work best if we go pick Twyla. It'll work best to go over there for him.
Okay, there's something hot to drink, I think, and maybe some crackers or cookies or something. Why don't you just...